For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Well, tis the season for interim studies at the state capitol. So there certainly have been plenty to go around. Ryan, let's start with you. Are there any that have piqued your interest?
You know, it seems like as soon as you take down the Halloween decorations, interim study season is here. It's earlier every year. There have been a couple, of course, looking at everything from injection wells. I think that the one that really has my interest is the one that was hosted by Representative Kevin Calvey, state representative who has been on a real personal crusade to reform the way that we select judges in the state of Oklahoma. Now, there's a really great, if you go to the Oklahoma Bar Association website, there's a really great response to this interim study about how we could change the way we select judges, possibly putting them up for popular vote, changing the Judicial Nominating Commission, or doing away with it altogether. David Porch, who's the current president at the Oklahoma Bar Association, has a great response to this. I encourage folks to go look at that. But at the end of the day, I think that we have a system that is not broken at all. And really what we see from Representative Kevin Calvey and folks that want to change the way that we're selecting judges, they're not so disappointed with the judges as they are disappointed in some of their rulings. I mean, Representative Calvey is the guy who, whenever he was upset about some of the reproductive health care rights decisions, he said that he was considering going to the state Supreme Court and setting himself on fire outside the building in protest. So, I mean, it's you know, I'm a lawyer. I've been involved in cases that I've lost and have adamantly disagreed with Supreme Court decisions at the state and federal level. But that doesn't mean that we up and change the rules just because we don't like the outcome. The process isn't broken. We need to preserve this system in Oklahoma that was really in response to one of the largest judicial bribery scandals in the history of our country.
Neva.
Well, I think it's always interesting when you look, certainly at the volume, as you say, I think there were 94 interim studies on the House side and 67 on the Senate side, and it really is a necessary process. I think some people want to just be dismissive and say this is not really important, but it really is an opportunity for these lawmakers, many of whom come in with not much background or knowledge in many of these key areas that they're having to kind of get up to speed quickly on, and this does afford the process. I think, you know, the House has changed through the years from where you would have a lawmaker that was interested in something. They would go kind of recruit their committee members and use that as the impetus to go through this study, where now they have these standing committees that really are the formation and the process whereby they go through and look at these different topics.
And certainly with term limits, you also don't have someone who spends 30 years on this subject.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the other thing is you have what the speaker did with these four that were basically full House committee, in other words, everyone on them, and they were the big issues, the judicial reform, the education, capital management, and I think water, you know, what bigger issues than some of those could be talked about. So I think it is a necessary process. I think when you look on the Senate side, it's interesting that they're looking again at the liquor law reforms. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the civil asset forfeiture debate back and forth on that. And then I think issues like childhood vaccination have gotten a lot of attention because it's clearly those are topics that not only have the lawmakers' attention, but tend to bring a lot of folks to the Capitol wanting to either be a part of the process of watching that interim study or asking to participate and bring forth information on their own. So, you know, I think it is the political season for that, but I do find it a very informative process to help move some of this legislation along.
Certainly mental health also was brought up. Former the labor commissioner's wife, Kathy Costello, got a chance to speak about mental health. How important do you think something like that is going to matter as in the upcoming legislative session?
Well, you know, and Eva's absolutely right. You know, these studies, they afford the lawmakers this opportunity to sit down oftentimes for a half a day or an entire day to talk about one subject and sometimes without even a legislative idea in response to it. Just sit down with a blank slate and get some information, which oftentimes during the legislative process or during the legislative session is just impossible. You've got deadlines that have to be met. You've got competing interest, competing bills. And so the ability to just sit down and talk about this stuff is incredibly important. And what mental health, I think, is on everyone's mind right now. both from the tragic death of Commissioner Costello, but you know, just the recognizing that so much of what we're dealing with in the state of Oklahoma, from our incarceration crisis to public health issues, stems from mental health issues in the state of Oklahoma. And so talking about this and these interim studies is incredibly important, because if we can't have this, if we cannot have this kind of in-depth conversation during the legislative session.
And I think part of that is really determining that this is such a big issue that there are no easy fixes. I think it's going to take a lot of discussion, and it's not just going to look at what some other state's done and say, okay, they passed a law that deals with mental health and deals with this issue, so let's just bring it over here and you know, pass it in Oklahoma. I think it's less about that and figuring out what are the real systemic problems, what are the real underlying problems, and then, you know, offsetting that with the age-old question that comes into all of these conversations about how do we fix it with the money that we have available.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Costello, Mark Costello was stabbed to death, and Governor Fallon has yet to name a successor. This happened several months ago. Neva, do you think this needs to be filled quickly?
Well, no, I think it needs to be filled very deliberately, okay. And I think that's what the governor's going through, is a process of determining who is the best person. And, you know, and as we know, I mean, as you begin to identify individual candidates that would be someone that that you think fits the bill to be in that position, sometimes there takes time to get that person in a position, particularly if they're in some other business or line of work or whatever it happens to be. These are not just momentary, instant picks that just happen overnight. So I wouldn't read more into it. In fact, I really would say that they are being extremely careful not to make a knee-jerk or a pressured decision of we should do this because X, Y, or Z, but rather do it for the right reasons.
They've not actually ruled out Costello's wife, Kathy Costello, not said that she's definitely not on the table. Is it still possible that she could be the next labor commissioner?
I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely. I think that it's possible, though. There isn't anything about her resume that I think disqualifies her from serious consideration by the governor, but I don't think that that's likely. And I think that Neva's right. There's a lot of careful deliberation going on here. Not just, and there are a couple of different layers. One, you need to have somebody in that position to undertake those duties that's competent to do that and can do a very good job at it. But I don't think it's a secret to anyone that Governor Fallon, as well as, you know, folks on both sides of the aisle, think that we elect way too many statewide officers in the state of Oklahoma, and that some of these positions ought to be appointed anyways. And so if the governor is going to use this as a springboard to the conversation about appointing positions like the labor commissioner, then you better appoint somebody that's really good, because they're going to be your example of why we could trust executive leadership in the governor's office to make these appointments rather than pitching them back to the voters every 4 years.
I absolutely agree, and frankly would hope that that would be the conversation that would be in this process, that the governor would, in fact, use some of her political capital and make that part of her state of the state and things that you would like to see next year, is really moving some of these offices to appointed again, which they have been before, both the labor commissioner and the insurance commissioner. And I think this kind of sets up for a perfect opportunity to have that discussion again.
And certainly it was legislation last year, didn't make it all the way through the process, but it certainly could again.
Right. And so, you know, and this is the example. So it's got to be a good appointment. It's got to be one that that will engender the confidence of the people of Oklahoma, that this can be done by the governor instead of by the voters.
The Sierra Club and other environmental groups are threatening a lawsuit against four energy companies involved with injection wells. Organizers say the practice violates federal law. Ryan, do they have a case here?
I think that they have a case. And frankly, the way that the injection well earthquakes are going to be dealt with in the state of Oklahoma is unfortunately going to be in the courts. We're not going to see it at the Corporation Commission for a variety of reasons. We're unlikely to see it in the legislature. The Corporation Commission, by its own admission, is perhaps not even within their own authority to regulate with the existing laws. So the idea of new laws coming along from the legislature is probably not going to happen. We've had voluntary compliance so far from most of the oil companies. We did have one oil company out of Tulsa say, we're not going to voluntarily comply. We don't think the Labor Commission or the Corporation Commission can make us. And so I think that we'll start to see some more cracks in that. You know, it's real easy to see voluntary compliance when you got $50 barrel in oil, oil at $50 a barrel. When it gets up to 100 again, which it's not impossible. It could. I think that we'll see less voluntary compliance. And we're seeing now that this has gone from just this idea of a couple of cracks in your sheetrock to the idea that we can have a 5.0 or larger earthquake in the next several years is a significant likelihood. And, you know, not only does that mean that our infrastructure in the state of Oklahoma and lives are at risk, but it's elevated to a national security risk. You know, right in Cushing, Oklahoma, where they've had some of these earthquakes nearby, you know, that's the hub. That's where they are setting the price for Texas crude coming out of Oklahoma for the entire nation. And the impact that an earthquake could have on that infrastructure in Cushing is very concerning.
Neva.
Well, I think what you have is a starting process where this letter starts the trigger on a 90-day time frame. And once that comes and goes, it's clear that the Sierra Club has said that they'll file a lawsuit in federal court. Changes the whole dynamic, because what they want then is a federal judge to basically declare a moratorium in some of these areas. And kind of reset the whole framework of what we're dealing with right now. And I think the other thing is, you've got these out of state attorneys who have come in, started to file class action lawsuits and individual suits against some of these specific companies that have been named, these four companies. So I think what we see now is, unfortunately, a long protracted trail of litigation, rather than trying to come up with something either from the regulatory standpoint, either at the state level or however it needs to be, where we can get all of the parties together and try to do something without having this contentious situation where it's how many people can lawyer up and how many lawsuits can we file. So,
well, and how long does all that take?
Without any real resolution on the issues at hand, which I think now we have seen some shift. It's been a long time coming, but as we see these numbers grow, I mean, clearly when you look at last year, almost 600 earthquakes. This year we're over 750, I think, or something now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the numbers clearly point to an issue that has to be addressed, but it can't be punitive on just, you take a meat axe to an industry that has 1 in 5 jobs in Oklahoma attached to it, and we have 8 other states in similar, you know, 7 other states, I think it is now, that are in similar circumstances with these same type of actions being put forth and the lawsuit spiral starting to take place.
Well, what I thought was interesting was the interim study, going back to those, that we talked about, one of the injection wells, there's no longer talk, there was last legislative session about, they weren't certain whether earthquakes were being caused by these injection wells. That was not discussed at all. Mm-hmm. It's now, we do know these earthquakes are caused by drilling and injection wells. Will that make a change, do you think, for the legislative session when it comes back, when lawmakers can't fall back on the jury's still out?
Well, I don't know that it'll make a quick change, because I think with all of this other litigation looming and the federal component involved, it's going to be very easy for everybody to kind of play, you know, it's in your camp, not ours, and play that back and forth, just like we've seen with the Corporation Commission. Now, we did see one of the commissioners kind of take a change in position and begin to say, oh, well, maybe we do have some role in this. So, and again, we have a Corporation Commission made up of 3 folks that are elected by the citizens of Oklahoma. So over time, that may become the linchpin issue that they have to deal with in terms of running for re-election or running for that office.
And they have to raise money from the oil and gas community. And we passed legislation this year that made it nearly impossible for local governments to regulate oil and gas drilling in these injection wells. So it means that all of the lobbying dollars, all of the lobbying focus is on these 3 individuals at the statewide level. And yeah, you know, I know that, you know, there, you know, so we've,
there's
we've
got, serious lobbying on both sides. So, oh, I think, I mean, you,
well,
can't, you can't argue. I mean, you
I think
everybody, the
Sierra Club's probably outgunned by oil and gas. But
well, they're not the only, you know, one coming to the table. And I think we will see more of these national groups coming in, because it is an opportunity for them to pile on and kind of change the debate. And they'll look at target states like Oklahoma to try to advance some of this agenda.
And, you know, I'm a lawyer. I'm the last guy to say that that you might suspect. You know, I really wish that we could resolve this without litigation, because, frankly, I think that the real risk that is posed to the people of Oklahoma is so significant and so immediate that the idea of protracted litigation, and this will be protracted, any of these, you know, whether it's class action lawsuits based on homeowners or a federal suit based on federal statute, any of these things is going to take way too long.
Absolutely. When you start talking moratoriums with a federal judge involved, I mean, you're talking years and years, if not decades. I mean it's a horrible setup.
Which, considering what's happening right now with the Oklahoma economy, when we're seeing what happens when drilling goes down, it has a major impact on the state. Even though they say we've got a diverse economy, we are still very dependent
on the industry. That's why if there is some opportunity to find some way to bring folks to the table and deal with something, at least in short-term incremental stages, rather than trying to say that it is all one way or the other. And I think that's like we talk about on so many of these cases with legislation. You can't always have it your way. We've got to bring folks to the table and find out a way to find a middle ground, some sort of common area that they can agree upon that at least moves it in the right direction rather than just shut the whole thing down indefinitely.
Because lawmakers have to compromise.
Well, good luck with that. And that compromise is a lot easier to enforce if you've got a federal judge saying, here's a settlement,
absolutely,
you've got to comply. And that's where, I wish we weren't at that point, but I think that litigation may be the only way that we get
and
people
here
to
we
the
go
table.
Again.
It's very similar to tobacco, right?
And we've seen this as a result of the overreach of EPA and so many of these federal agencies that have injected themselves into these particular situations and, really usurped the state's prerogative to deal with them on the local and state level, which is where it really should be.
Representative Mark McCullough has announced he will not seek a final term in the House. Ryan, you worked with the Sepulpa Republican during your tenure in the legislature. What do you think about this announcement?
As a dad, I completely understand I did not have children when I was in the legislature. Now, being somebody out of the legislature, I have two kids, and I can't imagine being in the legislature with two young kids and the amount of time that it takes away from your family. So, I think that we can all commend Representative McCullough for making that sacrifice with his wife and with his children for the last several years in the legislature. And I think it's understandable that you'd want to at some point say, okay, I've done my part here. I've made as much of a contribution as I feel like I can make, and it's time to move on and do something else. I don't think that we've heard the last of Representative McCullough. I think that we'll continue to hear his name out at the Capitol as somebody who's involved not only for his community, but at a statewide level.
And he's leaving quite a legacy. He's helped with tort reform. He's helped with workers' comp. He's done a lot of things up in the legislature.
He's had 10 years in the legislature and a very distinguished career. And really, when we start looking at more and more of these folks that are kind of hanging it up early, it's really about having felt, it appears that they feel like they've done, as you say, Ryan, what they came up and intended to do. And two more years won't really add that much to the process. It's not about whether or not it's going to be tough to get reelected. He was unopposed the last two times, had relatively minor reelection the time before that. So he's had a fairly easy time on that part of the spectrum. But I think it is more about really looking at the kind of the total process. And you're right, when you have a fourth grader and a sixth grader, mm-hmm. it's prime time as a dad to be there taking advantage of seeing a lot of things that you're going to miss, those ball games, you're going to miss those recitals, you're going to miss a lot of things that go on in your children's lives if you're sacrificing to be here in Oklahoma City trying to participate in the legislative process.
And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.